Welcome to Just Ask, the podcast of the Hive Collective, a digital health platform built to empower women to make educated and informed decisions about their health. I'm your co-host, Dr. Heather Quayle, a leading women's and gender-related nurse practitioner. We provide answers to the questions you may not know how to ask by interviewing experts in nursing, medicine, sexual health, and wellness. We started in 2020 with myself and colleague Dr. Tara Thompson, pharmacist, and now welcome our co-host and leading women's health expert and nurse practitioner, Jackie Piasta. This is a safe space where no question is off limits, and we advocate and encourage listeners to just ask their most intimate questions and to break down the barriers of embarrassment and taboo.
I'm Jackie Piasta, your other co-host and fellow Queen Bee of the Hive. Each month, we bring on a new guest that is an expert and healthcare innovator in their respective field. As the healthcare landscape rapidly evolves, we are excited to be on the cutting edge and have decided to evolve the podcast into the Hive Collective, a space that seeks to equip you to better navigate your health journey. To learn more about our new and exciting platform, check out our mission, vision, values, and initiatives as we discuss our rebrand in Season 4, Episode 1. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram. We're excited you're here and hope you enjoy our show. Hey, hey, welcome back, listeners. Thank you for being here. Heather and I have a great topic to discuss with you today. The sensational articles, a series of articles released in the Lancet Journal just this week, the first week of March. And the Lancet, if you guys are not familiar, is actually a very esteemed medical journal and oftentimes has some really great information to share with us and publish. So really interesting when this part one of this series of menopause articles was released. Sorry, Heather, didn't mean to cut you off.
No, go ahead. Yeah, I mean, well, it's a series of four.
Yeah, and I mean, honestly, it has sort of set social media on fire. Everybody is a little bit sort of all sorts of ways about this. I think there's a lot of feelings going on. And there, what did you say before we started recording this podcast that the was the right...
right intention with poor execution.
Yeah, right. And I love that. Right intention with poor execution. So, and frankly, as we get to talking about this, I keep racking my brain around why they felt like this was necessary. You know, I sit back and think. So essentially, the synopsis of it is saying that as we are focusing more on the benefits of hormone replacement therapy and starting to shift the conversation to hormone replacement therapy being good for menopause, that we are sort of over-medicalizing the menopause experience and that we're treating menopause like a disease rather than a natural lived life state. And then so a lot of criticism towards sort of menopause, people that specialize in menopause and tout the benefits of hormone replacement therapy.
Exactly. So the article, and we're going to link it in our podcast, is called A Time for a Balanced Conversation About Menopause. And again, just like Jackie says, it talks about this over-medicalization. I find a couple things I want to point out before we dive in deeply. Some of the things that just kind of set me off is it was posted right before International Women's Day. And so we're supposed to be driving the force of doing better for women. We've had Biden first. The first lady put out that she wants more women's research in women's health. So it's been positive. There's been so many people getting louder in the social media spaces on looking for things around menopause and health. It's getting harder to get your hormones because pharmacies are out of stock, which is telling me that the word's getting out there. But then this article comes out, and this is exactly what the WHI, the Women's Health Initiative, did so wrong in 2002. And there was a huge halt to hormone replacement therapy. So one of the things that I really want to point out that just didn't set super well with me is actually two points. There are about nine, and I got all of this information. I've done a lot of listening in Instagram. I'm going to give kudos to the head of our menopause, Dr. Mary Claire Haver. I know many of you that listen to us probably also follow her, 1 million followers on Instagram. If you don't, she's very, very wonderful around this. But one of the things that I was listening is that there is about 9,600 articles written on menopause and hormone therapy and all the things. And this actual opinion piece, remember again, this is an opinion piece. It wasn't even scientific based research necessarily. And it referenced only about 108 articles. And out of the 108 articles that it actually referenced of that 9,600 or so that exist out there, 17.5% of those articles that they cite were their own work. So again, this shows bias. And then my other really big complaint about it, which I have gotten really loud about on social media, and I know Jackie follows suit with me, is that the head author was an epidemiologist. So not a boots on ground clinician. Of course, we need epidemiologists and researchers in the world so that we can publish information and have evidence-based research. But when you are a boots on ground clinician every day in and out, listening to the concerns, the gaslighting, all the things that happens to women on a regular basis, not only just in menopause, just in women's healthcare, to kind of get told that this is over medicalized and that we need to suck it up, buttercup, that just does not sit well with me.
No, 110%. And they go on further to sort of state that, that vasomotor symptoms are they say they're usually limited and they go away. And they're only most frequent around that year, right before that last menstrual period, with this sort of almost condescending tone that like, oh, you should be fine with this. You shouldn't, it shouldn't cause too much of a disruption. And, it's frankly, that's just a load of BS. We know, we're more recent, findings published from the SWAN data study of women across the nation showed that there's a very much of a lengthy lived experience of menopause. The average duration of vasomotor symptoms, so that's the medical term for hot flashes in the night, so it's 7.4 years, with Black women experiencing these symptoms for the longest, upwards of 10 to 11 years. So I don't know about your definition of limited, Heather, but that's surely not my definition.
Yeah. 7 to 10 years limited. No, I call limited a week, but then again,
what on earth? I mean, it's just unbelievable. And then, they go on even further. There's a lot of almost, I want to say unintentional gaslighting, because I never want to say that people that are in this space should do anything out of trying to, I do think, like you said, the best intentions, they probably did have the best intentions here. But again, saying, quoting about how mental health is not directly related to menopause, that it's because of the life stressors that come hand in hand with menopause, and it isn't because of just menopause. And while we know, of course, sandwich generation, caring for kids and caring for aging, of course, like, that's not anything that we didn't already know. But I mean, there's a lot of amazing science coming out now on the neurological experience and neurochemical effects of your brain on in menopause. I mean, Dr. Moscone is dedicated her whole life to this. I mean, and it's just unbelievable that they would go that far. I mean, clearly they are not listening to patients day in and day out. That lived experience is so tone deaf, this article.
It is. And I don't think it didn't say hormones were not okay. I mean, it did. It said hormones were fine. But as we know, Jackie, like, hormones are the gold standard. And it clearly did not state that in this article, that most women can use hormones. Of course, there are exceptions. Almost every woman can use vaginal estrogen cream, which could be its own podcast in and of itself. But they talked about oxybutane and gabapentin. And I'm going to let Jackie take this one on, because she describes it so beautifully on one of her Instagram posts of it, that it literally had fire under my butt. I was so angry just listening about it.
Well, they basically are using the statistics in the UK, essentially, and how the use of menopausal hormone therapy has increased. Between 2020 and 2022, there's been about a 60% increase in the use of menopausal hormone therapy. Hello, that's a good thing. But, you know, and we've seen, you know, news stories of shortage supplies. We're just starting to see some shortage of hormone therapies here in the US as well. But they sort of say that with a negative slant on hormones, like, oh my gosh, how could this, the use of these medications increase so much in just 2 years' time? So we should be using these alternatives because there's real risks associated with hormone replacement therapy. Here's the thing. There's actually very few risks associated with menopausal hormone therapy if used in the right person during at the right time. And then we could even debate that even further. But they go on to, you know, use all these other drugs and no negative slant in terms of that. And what Heather's referring to of my little rant the other day is, you know, let's just take a med that we use a lot, oxybutynin. It's a bladder medication. We use it for a condition called overactive bladder. And it's in a class of meds called anticholinergics. And what we learned about anticholinergics in nursing school is you can't see, you can't pee, you can't, what is it? Can't see, can't pee, can't spit, can't shit. That's
yes,
what, spit, can't shit. So basically they dry you up. And what we find is that there is an association between long-term use of these anticholinergic drugs and dementia and cognitive decline. Well, how many patients are getting told that before they're getting put on oxybutynin? Same thing is true with these osteoporosis drugs, these newer gen infusion osteoporosis drugs. Great. Awesome. Wonderful. But they are associated with increase of myocardial infarction, or the medical term for heart attack, and stroke. And nobody, I just feel like these risks are not being discussed. Take our new drug, Veozah, fezolinetant, yes, the neurokinin receptor med for the neurons in our brain to help with hot flashes and night sweats. We have to monitor liver enzymes because there's been liver issues shown in the clinical trials. So everything comes with risks.
Risks and benefits, everything. And benefits.
But it's just was such a, you know, there was definitely an undertone of negativity towards menopausal hormone therapy and almost a scolding of how
very
much,
patronizing.
How much the escalation in the prescriptions has been, and hormone therapy is not a panacea. I think that was a direct quote, that hormone therapy is not a panacea. Well, no. Excuse me, no shoot, Sherlock. We know it's not a panacea. Exactly. We know you have to eat well and exercise and take care of yourself. But yeah.
And that's where, again, yeah, it's that shared decision-making, the evidence-based information. I think you always hear me have to put my sexual health 2 cents in here too, because it's just what I see on a regular and what I built my clinic around, is that the big thing they said you needed for sexual health was cognitive behavioral therapy. And I just face planted myself when I heard that, because 100% they took away this whole biopsychosocial approach. I use hormones day in and day out, obviously for menopause and hormone concerns, but I use them day in and day out for sexual health concerns. Cannot do my job without them, but I can't do my job without physical therapists. I cannot do my job without sex therapists. So yes, cognitive behavioral therapy has its place, but to tell women that cognitive behavioral therapy is going to fix their sexual health is baloney. So that again is another one of my hot boxes, because again, it's just so dismissive to women. It goes back to that, oh, well, you have a little bit of sexual pain or it hurts. Okay. It's okay. Just drink some wine. Again, so it's unnerving.
Well, and our good friend, family medicine doctor out of Portland, Oregon, Dr. Aoife O'Sullivan, she even said on her social media, when I read this article, I replace woman with man and menopause with erectile dysfunction. And if I feel like it's condescending, then I know it's condescending. And, you know, so much of the undertones in this article was minimizing of the menopausal experience. Again, like that suck it up buttercup. They even went as far as to have the consensus. So the authors agreed and concluded that most women have very few or no symptoms at all of menopause, and really only vasomotor symptoms or hot flashes and night sweats, vaginal dryness, and maybe, just maybe, sleep disturbances. It's all we can really associate with menopause on its own, which I want their menopause. I think most of these authors, they were women, oddly enough. Everybody's like, oh, was it written by men? But I'm like, okay, I want to know what I want their menopause, because that's not the menopause I'm experiencing with my patients day in and day out. As I know it's not yours either.
No, absolutely. The other thing they talked about was, again, these behavioral strategies that will reduce anxiety that accompanies this hot flashes and night sweats and sleep hygiene, and then beliefs around increasing arousal and all the things. And that there were questions on how can clinicians support this? But in the article, they actually made no references to this, no references on how you could support this, no references on where clinicians could go for this for help. So again, it just feels very patronizing. There's been a lot of words around how it steeps in misogyny. I've had other people tell me, oh, Heather, I wouldn't go so far as to say that. I'm a true feminist at heart. I think Jackie, in some ways, is very similar to me in a lot of different ways. And I think it's very steeped in misogyny, because it's like you said, when there's erectile issues, or this is a man's symptom, or they can't get their Viagra, oh my God, the world's going to end and it's going to stop. And we're going to do everything we can to help men.
Yeah. Well, and it's also too, I think it's really important because, we Heather and I, we come and we speak from a place of immense privilege. We're both white females. We are, in a socioeconomic status where we have a lot of privilege. And I
Absolutely.
think to this article was also written from a massive place of privilege. There's a lot of just like minimization of symptoms, and then also like so much mention of cognitive behavioral therapy being the choice sort of intervention. I mean, first of all, we have a lack of mental health professionals. We have a burdened mental health, workforce, and we have people that don't have access. They don't have access to mental health. And, no amount of therapy and talking to a therapist is going to fix the, hormone decline that's happening in your body. But again, there's so much, I don't know what I'm trying to say, but I just feel like there's a lot of assumptions here coming from a place of privilege, and it's really doing a disservice, I think, to women in general, but those especially that do not have that same level.
Absolutely. And I think if we're going to take it from a place of privilege, I think the way it almost needs to turn is, if you come from a place of privilege, what are we going to do to make this better? What are we going to do with research and funding and resources? If we have this, we're going to get louder in Instagram. Jackie and I are actually going to start looking at doing some evidence-based research and surveys on our social media so that we can be more impactful to much bigger than just our own patients. And so what does this look like to change the narrative? When an article comes out such as this, we know how bad the WHI did for women. I don't think we're going to let that continue with this article. There's so many people out there screaming and yelling, so I'm hoping there's an army around it. But I'm hoping what it did is it sparked some fire under people to say, what can we do to change this so we don't end up like we were 20 years ago with the WHI?
I think we definitely don't need to be pulled back in the opposite direction, and we have so much momentum going forward. This is, again, like you said earlier, this is an opinion piece. This changes nothing. These are a few people's opinion on a subject matter that affects that will affect 50% of the population. 1.1 billion women by 2025 will be menopausal. It's the largest growing demographic that we have worldwide. And again, one or a series of four opinion pieces that are poorly cited, poorly referenced, so clear bias. I just think maybe I think maybe be a fart in the wind, hopefully.
Yes, hopefully that's the case. Best way to put it. So what we'll do is we will put the Lancet information in the summary bios for us. We always put in there how to find us, how to reach out to us, how to DM us if you need things, but we will put all the show notes in there and all the different things. But we just wanted to come out really timely. We wanted to get this podcast pushed out within less than a week of all this information coming out. That was kind of the goal when Jackie and I rebranded this, is to get you the latest, the greatest, the most up-to-date information to kind of challenge you, to help you as you navigate these changes going on in your life too.
Yeah. Well, thank you all for listening, and we're so excited you're here with us, and we hope to see you next time.
All right, have a great one.
Bye. All right.
Thanks for listening to the Just Ask podcast, and thank you for our amazing panelists today and every day. Feel free to contact us publicly or privately with your questions and thoughts. We do not provide medical advice, but we can point you in the right direction and provide resources. You can learn more about the topics we've discussed in this episode by viewing the show notes for this podcast and following us at Just Ask ATL on Facebook and Instagram. Our podcast is available on all of your favorite platforms, including iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, Pandora, Google, Amazon, and iHeartRadio. Please make sure you subscribe to the show so you never miss an episode. If you found value in this discussion, please share this podcast with friends or leave a rating on iTunes. Thanks again for listening. We can't wait for you to join us for the next show.